Okay, so welcome to this week's podcast, Family Tree Talk. My name's Helen Tovey. I'm editor of Family Tree, and with me is...
Nathan Ward. Hello there.
Hello. So, Nathan, just a few minutes ago, you said something completely shocking that you thought we weren't going to have anything to say, even though we're talking about family history.
I know, but I've been bad. I've not been as Family Tree diggy this week. So, I feel guilty.
Don't feel guilty. It's supposed to be fun.
Yeah. I'm excited. There's places I want to go and want to do with my family tree, and yet life gets in the way, doesn't it, sometimes? I guess I need to not be so harsh on myself.
You shouldn't be. And that's I think sometimes people who don't do family history, they have this thing of like, so have you finished yet? And it's like, it's not a finishing yet situation.
Yes, definitely. I also, like, it sounds like I'm making excuses now, and I'm very aware of that, but I want to be able to know that I can dedicate enough time to it, because when you get digging, you just want to keep going, don't you? Mm. And I've been so frantic this week. It's like, if I start for 10 minutes, I know I'll end up in there for 2 hours, and I just haven't had those 2 hours. And I am excited to actually find out some of the results of, like, some of my little mysteries that I've been hunting for, like the Ida's death and finishing off Maggie and Elson, finding how she died. I'm actually intrigued and excited to do it, but I want to be able to, like, you know, really absorb it and take it in. Not just go on the internet, press a few buttons, click, tick, done, bosh, bang.
Mm.
That's not fun, is it?
Mm. I think you're right to want to be able to dedicate enough time to it, because although family history is something that you can dip into and do in little bits, and if you keep a research log, just in case I've never, ever mentioned that before, it doesn't matter if you do it in little bits, because you can pick it up and put it down. But to actually pull all the thoughts and strands together and then also write it up in some sort of way that is useful to you and potentially useful to other people, doesn't have to be a massive work of literature, but just not just a series of facts. So just even just generating a paragraph of, like, this is what I found and this is what they did and these are my reflections on it. That's what our fellow family members want. So we do need to kind of put lots. There's so many different things we need to be able to pull together. So you're right to want to be able to dedicate special time to it.
Yeah, I feel like, and in my research log, I guess you've probably actually just said this, but as much as the research I'm doing, and you did mention this when I first set up my research log, but having like a list of tasks you want to do and just keeping it in mind all times, because obviously it does get so expansive and so big that you can lose yourself in it a little bit, or be doing one thing and get totally lost everywhere else. And I feel like that. I just feel overloaded, I'll be honest with you.
That's why that kind of methodical approach. So the log is part of the story, but then the log has to also, it's not to put you under more pressure. It kind of needs to be effective as well. So when you're logging your research, a key bit that really needs to go in there, and I'm really guilty of not doing this enough, is writing down why you think what you think. Because it's all very well saying, oh, I found Joe Bloggs living at number 7 with X, Y, and Z people. But you kind of need to have a summary explaining kind of where you've looked to explain how you ended up at that front door of number 7 and why you think that's the correct Joe Bloggs. And there's this thing called the genealogical proof standard. You're going to go, oh, I've had enough. It's too much detail, Helen. But this genealogical proof standard, this is something which is cooked up by the Americans, but it is really, really good. And one of the key facets of it is having kind of a reasonably argued conclusion about your work, because that helps you and other people. It's not just, it takes it beyond just, okay, you've gathered some names and dates, which on the day of your research, you put in your research log and you're pretty sure it's correct. But 2 years down the line, you may not have any idea why you thought that. And you may spot a different Matilda, Maria, whoever it is, Maggie, in the records. And unless you've kind of dotted your I's and crossed your T's and written a little conclusion why you think what you thunk, then you're not going to know why you did it. This sounds a bit like Winnie the Pooh now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Or Dr. Zeus. It's all going mad.
No, it's true. That does sound actually quite good, doesn't it? I don't want a full stop, but you want a level of clarity and saying, yes, that's done. And I think a product is that, obviously, this podcast and me talking to you and obviously the guests we've had on, it's bringing lots of like interesting and exciting things to the table that I didn't think I was going to be interested in or want to do. And it's ever expanding, and it can be overloading. And I know we've discussed before about, I know you said you don't use it yourself, but that routine of week one, do this, week two, do that, week three, do that, week four, do that. And I'm like, maybe I should be doing that, because I've gone from wanting to just do my DNA to wanting to get facts and figures to getting lost in people's stories to now actually want to write up their stories. All these things that at each stage I never thought I'd be bothered about. And now I'm like, I've got this information in my brain. I'm worried I'm not going to retain it, so I should get this bit down now. Obviously, Tank Man, getting all the details while they're fresh in my head. Yes, I've put it on my research log, but as we discussed the other week, you put it in the notes on Ancestry for future generations and making sure that the information I'm getting is logged somewhere so somebody else can find it, I guess.
You're right. You're really right to want to do it. And I'm a little bit jealous, as ever, that you're thinking these thoughts early on in your kind of genealogy journey, because I haven't done it nearly enough. And so sometimes I think I found out loads about somebody, and then when I go back and look at it, it just feels like it's a few piecemeal clues. And I think, I wish I'd written it up. And whenever I do write anything up, it does always mean I have to research more to fill it out, because it's never as full as what I thought, but it's always time well spent.
Yeah, definitely. And it is that thing, isn't it? We have discussed it before about finding these people and remembering them. And then it's like, because we've remembered them, it's good to write it down so somebody else can then have that story later on to pass down. I'm just kind of baffled by myself at the moment. It's stuff that I honestly, when you were like, oh, I like to have stories about my family, etc., I'm just like, I'm not interested in that. And now it is like, I want these stories. And prior to that, it was about, you know, like having favourite relatives and building that tree backwards or looking at your DNA. I just wasn't bothered. It just gets you, doesn't it?
It really, really does. I think you should be fair to yourself as well, Nathan, because we have had a really busy few weeks at work, haven't we? So every month we do this wonderful magazine called Family Tree, which we love and we've been doing forever. And then occasionally we do other publications as well. And we've just put together a new edition of our guide for beginners family history. And it's called Start Your Family Tree. I think there's things which are useful in it, which would suit people who've been doing their family history for a few years. And there's loads of stuff in there, which is good for you. Just everything from like how to name your files to how to dig into the major archives, how to get going in your DNA. There's so many things. But anyway, this is a massive 100-page guide, which we've been working on over the last month, over and above everything else we've done. So of course you're going to feel busy and tired.
Yeah, definitely. It is a good little book that, like obviously I've been working on it, but as I'm looking at it and putting it together, I'm like, oh, hello. This is a good idea.
Yeah.
But yes, we have been busy, and it is obviously press week this week. So it'll be out soon for everybody to enjoy.
I keep having to write everything down a bit like a wish list, because we do lots of, you know, interesting talks. And inevitably, you leave a talk or you've read an article and there's things you want to follow up, and you can't follow them up there and then. But having a wish list and bookmarking websites, all that sort of thing, just being methodical does take the panic out of it, because you think, I've written it down, so when I get a chance, then I can just go and immerse myself in it.
Yeah, definitely.
Cheers. I'm going to talk about two news stories which we have got going in the issue which goes to print today, and they kind of join together in my head. So one of them, well, they kind of, you know, with family history, everything joins into everything. So a few weeks ago, Laura House did this amazing presentation as part of DNA Discoveries, and it was about brown babies. So these were the babies which were born to British women and GI soldiers, and they weren't allowed to marry them because of, I don't know whether you call them racial rules, kind of unwritten racial rules, which were put out by the British government. And it felt a massive scandal. And I felt ashamed that I didn't even really know about this. Anyway, Laura spoke very emotionally and eloquently about it. Then linking into that, there's a new news story that MyHeritage, won't be new by the time the podcast comes out, but anyway, MyHeritage have released the draft registration cards for World War II era, so 1940 to 1947, American service personnel. So I was thinking, oh, that would be jolly handy if you were trying to trace, you know, a GI person in addition to your DNA. That would be great. And then MyHeritage have used AI to index these records, even though they're handwritten cards. You know, they've got a kind of typed form, but then they're scrawled all over in handwriting. AI, no problem. Apparently, it's got a really good level of accuracy. That's what MyHeritage said. I haven't actually tried it myself to know how accurate it is, or to gain a feel for it. But anyway, I don't doubt that it has got a good level of accuracy. So AI has transcribed all this beautiful old handwriting. And then this links onto another news story we had. So about a decade ago, 4 Anglo-Saxon arm rings were found, and it's called the Galloway Hoard. And over the past decade, academics have been trying to decipher the Anglo-Saxon runes on these arm rings. And they worked out that 3 of them belonged to 3 people, and the 4th one was a mystery. Anyway, it has a really kind of communal message on it. And it says words to the effect of, this property is, it belongs to everybody, and that's written in Anglo-Saxon runes. And I was thinking, oh, well, I don't know. What would be really cool, at some point, AI is going to go with the runes. It's not just the handwriting. It's going to be able to just decipher runes as well, won't it? Maybe it can already. That's kind of beyond our era, isn't it? Anglo-Saxon is only something we touch on very occasionally with family history.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
It's really cool, isn't it?
It is. It is terrifying how good AI is getting, isn't it? Really can just learn. I was reading today that apparently it costs them money every time you're nice to AI, which amused me.
Oh, why is that then?
Every time you thank ChatGPT or whatever it is, because it's taking the information in, it's and like obviously millions and millions of people using it, it's using electricity and energy, so it actually costs loads of money for them when we thank AI.
I think we need to be nice to AI because it's learning and it's like a little... Not like a little child, it's way beyond that, but it is like a child. It's learning how we behave and how we think. So we need to be nice to it.
Well, yeah, the company says it's good to learn human mannerisms and obviously how to interact with people properly. So they say as much as it costing them money, you should do it. From my perspective, I do it for when the robot overlords take over. So
that's exactly why I do it as well. Not that we're nervous or anything.
You want to put yourself in a good position, don't you?
Yeah.
I watched a film the other day called A Real Pain. Have you heard?
No.
It's the one, I'm going to pronounce his name wrong. Macaulay Culkin's brother.
I'm rubbish. I don't know.
I want to say Kieran Culkin. Anyway, he won an Oscar for Best Actor for this film. And I went in to watch it without knowing what it was about. In my head, it was called A Real Pain. And the trailer made it look like it was... a buddy movie where there was a best friend who was a real pain in the ass and just annoying his best friend. Anyway, it's not that at all. It's about 2 cousins who are of Jewish descent going to Poland to follow the trail of their grandmother who's died, and she survived the death camps, and then they go visit her house and they're making a pilgrimage basically about her life.
Wow.
And as I was watching it, I was just like, oh my God, this is Family Tree magazine. It was, you know, obviously it's a film, but it was really poignant, really cool. And I was just so absorbed in it. It was, as much as it was a fiction, obviously a lot of that did happen. And it reminded me just in small part of what I'm sort of doing in the early stages, just following the trail of your family. It was cool.
It is really cool. And when I say, you know, it doesn't matter how long it takes and it's not urgent and it's just a hobby, then for lots of us, lots of the time, that is what family history is. It is just a really nice pastime, and it can get emotional, and there isn't a sense of urgency. But then for some people, depending on what their ancestors have lived through and how long ago they lived through it, then it's a completely different beast, really, isn't it? You know, if you're tracing... Like I mentioned, you know, a few minutes ago, about if you're the descendant of a GI baby, or you are a GI baby, or if you have Holocaust ancestors, you know, there's so many variables why suddenly it becomes a very, very urgent and poignant thing in your life. It's not, it stops being so kind of incidental.
Definitely. Well, I watched that webinar with Laura as well, and it was really emotional and really quite harrowing, to be honest. Fantastic stories, but you just don't think about these things affecting real people, do you? I know it sounds daft to say, but you don't think it's going to be a part of people's lives, and then suddenly all these stories are coming out. She was saying, wasn't she, that she felt angry for the people around her family that got treated in these ways and not all the ignorance of how the government, I don't know. It's just, I don't know, the scale of it, it just really got me, especially in this movie.
It is emotional. And the when there are chapters of our family history which are difficult, and particularly when they have layers of either clouding over or actual secrecy or deliberate lies, you know, humans, we are animals, and very often once things from the past become clear to us, we do so often hear people say, oh, I always knew that, I always suspected that, something always felt wrong. And you could say, oh, it's just people like justifying after the event, but it happens so often that people kind of not feel suspicious but feel uncertain about something, and then when they do the family history, or could be a DNA results, you know, that should throw up a set of events that, although they didn't officially know anything about it, once they get the results, they go, oh, that makes sense. So none of these things are hidden, and it's partly the epigenetics thing or our nature nurture. So we inherit a lot from our parents and our ancestors, not just our genes. We're a complex mixture of what we get told as we get brought up and the untold things we learn as we get brought up.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
It is fascinating. I do love nature nurture. I don't know where I stand on any of it, but you do just wonder, don't you? And it's like when my mum will say, oh, your granddad used to be like that. Oh, you're just like your granddad. Yeah, and it's like, have I carried that trait on from seeing his behaviour, or is it part
of the worst,
who I am?
What's the word? What's it called?
Like I can't talk about
don't
food.
Don't do as I do, do as I say person. That's why I have to have so many lists, because I always don't do what I'm supposed to do. It's almost like pathological. Yes, it's bad, isn't it?
Not really. You're making me feel better about myself, though, no.
Yes. So I've been going through old photographs, which is something I'm a bit shocked about. This is taking me so long to do. And so partly I'm sorting out our modern day photos. Partly I'm sorting out some ancestor photos, which my uncle gave me. And part of me feels, why is this taking me so long? And so he lent me 3 years ago. I'm feeling the pressure of it now because I'm going to see him at the end of May. So I've really got to get this sorted out by now. And I have digitized a lot of them. Gave me 9 albums. Doesn't sound that much, does it? But in one of the albums alone, then there were 300 images. And so because I was trying to do best practice digitization, then I scanned the back and the front of every single photo. So now we're up to 600 photos just for one album.
Yeah,
I'm doing them in a raw file because my husband said that's best for the future. So each one's about 30 megabytes.
Oh,
it's little. And so my poor little brain and my poor little computer, I'm trying to be so methodical, back to the kind of pick it up, put it down project. So that has kind of queue jumped because of the imminent detail of seeing him. And so I can't believe how forgetful I am. So when he gave me the albums, they were in this scruffy cardboard box, and I was like, that won't do at all. They need to be kind of stored in, you know, a cool receptacle.
Mm.
And I had meant to buy a wonderful archive quality cardboard box, or a few cardboard boxes, to put each one of them in, because one of them is a beautiful Victorian Bible style album stacked with cabinet cards with a metal hinge, just the sort of thing you want. One of my ancestors, in the meantime, since this Victorian album was made, has put black gaffer tape all over the spine.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Horrendous, isn't it? Anyway, I haven't got around to buying the archive box. But in the meantime, I went to help my mum clear out her house, and there was this tatty green case. And I was like, what on earth is this? And so I pulled out the case, and it was all crumpled and dusty. And I accidentally ripped a tiny bit of the handle because it was so fragile. And then I read on the side, and hand painted, so it's a green canvas case about 18 inches long, like a suitcase, but you'd hold it in your hand. I don't know what you call it. It's got a special old-fashioned name, like a carry-all thing. Anyway, it's got my great-grandfather's name on the side, and RE for Royal Engineers, and it's totally military colour and everything else, and it's his First World War suitcase.
Wow, that's awesome.
Anyway, so I've put all the albums in this bag, which I don't know whether that's a good idea or not, but it just felt like it was a good thing for the bag, because the bag needed something to get it back into shape because it had been scrunched up. Yes, but you can't pick it up by the handle because it will just totally rip. Anyway, that's where everything's stored at the moment. Looks
cool. Yeah, it's cool. A proper piece of living history. It's cool.
It is. It's really amazing. And I think it'll be a really nice surprise for my uncle when I give him back the albums. When he gave them to me, I don't think he was giving them to me. I think he was giving them to me to digitize.
Right.
So I don't want to hog them forever. 3 years is quite a long time to hog
them. It sounds like a right task, that, though. Right.
Yeah.
600 images. That was just from one album?
That's just one album. And then there's another bag of loose images. But I mean, they're incredible photos. So like one of the photos is when the family have gone to South Africa, and they've got this basket which is like the height of a human, and so to get on and off the boat you'd have to climb into this wicker basket, shut the little wicker door, and then they just heave you over on the crane like you're a bit of luggage. Mad, isn't it?
That's crazy.
Yeah, this same guy who was in the Royal Engineers after the war, he carried on being an engineer, and so he worked in quite a few different places all over the world. So quite a lot of the images were pictures of building sites all over the world from the 1920s and 30s. And part of me didn't digitize them, or didn't want to digitize them, because I was like, yeah, yada, yada, they're not ancestors. I don't want to have building sites and docks and all that sort of thing in airfields being made, stuff like that. And then I was like, no, I absolutely do need to digitize these for two reasons. One, because those photos are such a reflection of his character. He was a really methodical person, and he took those photos because they meant a lot to him. So that's such a great insight to his character and his work. Anyways, yeah. They are all safely digitized. And the other bit is that, well, my little grandson, he loves making things and building things. So to be able to tell him that his great-great-great-grandpa, these are photos his great-great-great-grandpa took 100 years ago when he was working all over the world building airfields, it's pretty cool, isn't it?
It is. It's
that's his three times great-grandpa. Like, yeah. I can tell him things about, you know, like things which will actually interest him. I'm showing pictures of him playing ping pong on Christmas Day in Persia, which doesn't even exist anymore. Yeah.
That's a lot of history, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like you're saying, they must have meant something to him. It's not like today where a photograph's so disposable. Like, you know, I take about 86 photographs every day and delete most of them because of all nonsense. Whereas in those days, you're taking a photograph, you know, it's costing you to get it developed, you've only got a limited amount of roll on your camera, so to actually, like say, have photographed them and then kept them, they are part of
it. An album.
Yeah, definitely. That is cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
No one photographs me at work.
We should do photos of us at work. Publishing industry.
Exactly. Well, in years to come, we're dead and gone. Our great 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 grandchildren will be like, well, what did they do? How did they do things?
Yes.
And see us touching keyboards and be like, what the hell's a keyboard? And they won't know.
Yes. They won't know.
Is this going to be like history that's missing because we don't think about these things or document them?
It's a big problem. This is another plug. So honestly, the stuff we do is just so useful. So I'm really excited about this. I'm really excited about everything. But so in our June issue, then there's this wonderful genealogist called Jana Hellstein, and she's written an article called Genealogy for Our Descendants. And she is just urging people not to forget themselves when it comes to doing their family history, and to make sure that you leave a legacy for your children. Not legacy in like terms of loads of money. And she says not legacy in terms of like loads of tomes of family history, but to let them know who you are and what your values are and what makes you tick and what makes you happy and sad and all that sort of stuff.
That is interesting, isn't it? Because I think a lot of us now, if we can be bothered, we put all that rubbish on social media, and it's very throwaway and it's not chronicled anywhere else. But I guess you think you're chronicling it because it's on social media. But then,
yeah,
my social media accounts are locked, so only people that I know closely are going to see my stuff. And then when I'm gone, no one will see it, will they? Mm-hmm. For mine, it's like, oh, I've been to this gig, I've done this, I went here, I had this holiday there. Our parents and grandparents put those in photo albums that we could access and look at. Mm-hmm. All these digital files that I've got, no one's going to see you. That's a weird one, isn't it? I hadn't even thought about that.
Yes, we are going to be a black hole for the future, probably.
Yeah, a wealth of information, yet nobody knows anything.
Yes.
It's weird.
Yes, no one will be able to access it. And also, there'll be just too much because it's uncurated.
Yeah, too much because there'll be waffle. Like today I had baked beans for my tea. Oh, who cares? Yeah, our great-great-grandchildren, if they somehow can get access to my Facebook account, suddenly reading about what I was eating on Wednesday. It's just ridiculous. All the wrong stuff, isn't it?
She's got her article in the June issue, and then in June at Study Club, she's going to do a talk. And I think it's going to be very inspiring, and it will actually get a lot of us stopping forgetting ourselves and make a proper concrete effort to make sure that we're not a black hole in our family history.
Right. And can I get a hint? Where does she say we should do this? Is she going to say social media and I'll have to be quiet?
No, she says lots of different things. She says you can do it online, or you can do it in a book. You can write letters. Yeah.
That's novel, isn't it?
I know.
Sure, I don't know how to write anymore.
No, get a sore hand or something, wouldn't we? So from our sense of overwhelm, do you think there is anything that we should be concentrating on over the next week?
For me? Yeah. I'm just a little bit bored of myself. I am giving myself a get-out course here. If I hadn't mentioned this already, which I know I've mentioned it a million times, I'm doing a marathon on Sunday. And it has overtaken my life. My life has been work, sleep, run. That's it. But after Sunday, I'll be clear. So I'll be like, I'll have free time, which obviously everything's competing for your free time, isn't it? So I will have some more free time, and I am going to, oh my God, I hate myself right now, but I'm going to order those death certificates, get that bit done. And then I'm going to see if I can get, well, I'm giving myself too much work again.
Yes. That's enough.
Will I get them instantly?
You get them in a few days. Let me see. What, I can't remember what era they are. Are they 1920?
Yeah, 10th century.
Yes. So the ones, it depends, there's like historic closure periods. So go on the GRO website, and it will, when you put in the death certificates you want to order, then it will say whether JPEGs are available, or PDFs, or whether you have to order a paper copy, depending on what era you're searching in. So you sound like you're far enough back that you'll have JPEGs. And I don't think they'll be instant, but they'll be pretty instant. So within a few days, you should have them. Yeah.
Okay. Well, in that case, maybe I'll give myself a little bit more homework, because the ordering shouldn't take too long. I've already got the reference numbers.
I don't think you should give yourself any more, because you know why? When you get those death certificates, they're going to have loads of information all over them. They're going to have an address that you're going to want to look up on a map. They're going to have a cause of death that you may not know what it is, so you're going to have to find out what that cause of death is. Mm. You're going to be intrigued to find that the informant wasn't a mum or dad, it was somebody else. There's going to be some other kind of anomaly. You're going to work out who that person is, or why, what. So they're not just going to be something you go, oh, death certificate, tick, add the image to my tree. It's going to have loads of information that you're going to want to follow up.
Okay, I'll be nice to myself then. Ease myself back in.
Yeah, and even like transcribing up the death certificate. I think I banged on about transcribing the other week, but that's really worth it. Don't just think, well, you know the key details. You've got her birth date and, her death date and her name. Then look at every single detail on there and literally type it up. You can type it up into your ancestry tree, or type it up into a research log, and that slowing down and typing it up is very satisfying. And you might not be able to read all of it. That doesn't matter. Just put either square brackets and a question mark around bits that you're not sure of, so that you know you're not sure of them. And you will make progress, and you will learn more.
Okay.
Unavoidable. It's nice. So I think just keep it as that, as a project, and follow like what you said at the start of this podcast session. Just giving yourself time and permission not to rush. Say, wait, I've got a couple of hours. I'm just going to look at these death certificates, and I'm not in a hurry. It's fine.
Yeah.
To really not scoot over things and miss out things.
I think sometimes life can just make you want to hurry, can't it? Like,
I think our life does. Yeah.
This week, I found out that my local library is shutting, and it's a local library and historical centre. It says that on it. Mm. And obviously, we've had discussions where you're like, oh, you might find details of family members in the local papers from God knows when. And so all that information stored there, they're shutting it down, knocking it down and building some houses. So that's panicked me a bit. I'm like, well, I need to get in there. And I'm like, well, should I go now? But then I'm like, I've got nothing concrete to find or look for yet that says get to that library. It's that random, sudden sense of immediacy.
We used to have this wonderful man who used to answer questions and answers in Family Tree. And he always used to say, if you're trying to focus up what, you know, when you're going to visit an archive and you're not quite sure how to kind of what's the word, order your thoughts, and then just think to yourself, and you can even ask the archivist, or you can write it on a piece of paper and look through the catalogues yourself, but you're trying to think, what information do they have about this person at this time in this place? So you're not trying to discover everything in the archive, because there's hundreds, potentially sometimes over 1,000 years worth of material in an archive. But you're just trying to think of one name or surname, one locality, one particular era. So you're trying to find the wards in Pudsey in the 1940s. What records exist for that period, that place, and then what people are you going to find in there? And that's quite helpful. So you could tackle your local archive that way.
Yeah, sounds like a cool thing to do. Maybe
it isn't it? It's a bit less daunting than just trying to think, what do I need to find in here?
Yeah, it was just that sudden instant panic when I was told it was shut. And I was like, oh my God, I was planning to get in there, and it's quite sad, so.
Mm. Have they said where the material's going to get stored?
Mm. Rumours have it it's going to share itself with a children's nursery and come out twice a week or something like that. So it will still exist, but it sounds ridiculous.
Mm.
We'll see.
So that's your homework, your death certificates. And my homework is to carry on with the digitization and to carry on with my transcription of my grandpa's, his RAF log, because I was all on about my RAF, all my Second World War ancestors, to find out what they were doing at VE Day. Very frustratingly, his logbook doesn't cover, it just has this massive gap. So it starts in about, I think it's 1940, ends in 1958, and there's a massive gap in the middle. So he didn't keep his research log or his flying log at all well. So I have no clue what he's doing.
Right, he's in trouble.
He is in trouble, yes. Well, if anybody does want to find out about their military ancestors, a really good thing to look out for is a series of articles that we've got with Graham Bandy starting in the June issue. I know that I keep plugging everything we're doing, but it is literally so useful. So in the May issue, he wrote an article about tracing ancestors through the Second World War period, particularly with our VE Day hat on, to mark the 80th anniversary of VE Day. Then following on from that, he's going to do more in-depth articles. So we're looking at Royal Navy ancestors in the June issue, then we're going to go on to RAF ancestors in the July issue, then we're going to stop for the series, do VJ Day era ancestors, and then we're going to move on to the Army. We're going to be looking at medals in the series, all sorts of things. So if you do want to dive into military ancestors, then the issues of Family Tree, from probably this May issue onwards, but definitely from the June with the more in-depth articles, they are good. They're going to help you. They cover all eras, not just First World War, not just Second World War.
Some great pictures in there as well, aren't there? Uniforms, it's really cool.
Graham makes this really good point that, so we do, and we are increasingly relying on AI to do things, and he is not a fan of AI, because AI gets a little bit overconfident when it comes to old uniforms. And so it will just colour them in, whatever colour it thinks would be nice. And I know there are algorithms which apparently can determine whether it's blue or green or red or black or whatever, but they can still get it wrong or seriously the wrong sort of green. And so it slightly fries his head when AI is used to colour all photos. And then the other thing he said is obviously old uniforms. On balance, they are uniform, so they're identical, but where the devil is in the detail. So the buttons, the shoulder titles, you know, where it has the names of the regiments, whatever, on people's shoulders, the cap badges, all these tiny, tiny details, they give you clues about whether your ancestor was a, you know, officer or other ranks or which regiment they were in, all that sort of thing. But very often in these old photos, they're too small to easily distinguish. And so it is a challenge even for AI at the moment. Maybe in the future it'll get better. So we have to not be over-reliant on AI. We have to still use all of our old wits and caution that we used to.
Yeah, it is terrifying. And like, even from my perspective, when I've been designing articles to do with the war, you go onto a stock image website to get an image, and a lot of them now do get generated by AI. And I'm looking for wartime camouflage, and it gives you one. And then I'm suddenly like really paranoid. Is this really correct, or is it just fake, or is it just a guess? And obviously you want to be accurate, because, well, the devil is in the detail, isn't it, with all that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's very particular. I display the images the wrong way around because then insignia's on the wrong side or things like that. It is terrifying.
So you need to read Famitree magazine. Hopefully we don't get the images back to front. Hopefully everyone can learn the knowledge they need to analyse their old photos, military photos, correctly.
Yes.
That's the goal.
Dig ourselves a hole there, yes. I'll have to go check all the images now.
No, yeah. I mean, half the thing, isn't it, with doing any research, whether we're researching pictures for the magazine or whether people are researching things for their own family history, it's being that precise, because that's going to be, you know, drastically determine whether it's right or not. You need to get exactly the right era.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you could be just construing all sorts of things that never happened.
It's so easily done, isn't it? I've had it with just basic stuff, just people's surnames or people being called by the middle name and things like that. And that's just small details. And then when you get to the war things, it obviously escalates ridiculously because you've got where they fought, who they fought with, what battalion. There's so much information that you could just get totally lost with, couldn't you? I know I will when I get properly into it.
Getting lost and then admitting to ourselves, we've got a bit lost.
Yeah.
Not panicking, scribbling it out and carrying on. Oh, well, thanks for listening, everybody. If you have been tempted by the sound of any of the cool things we've been mentioning, quite a few of these talks happen as part of our Famitree Plus program. This is an online program of talks that we do every single month. And as part of that, we have a study club talk, DNA club talk, a brick walls, skills and solutions club talk, and a bonus webinar. And these are all included as part of your Famitree Plus membership, which also includes a digital copy of the magazine, plus a digital library of the past issues of the magazine, plus a library of recordings of past talks we've done. It's pretty cool. It's a really good resource, and it's a really searchable functionality to look through past issues of the magazine, search on topics of interest to you. Anyway, you can take a free 7-day trial. And when you take the free trial, you are also completely welcome to copy down the Zoom links for the upcoming talk. So you can listen to, you have 7 days to explore the Famitree Plus site for free, but you can get all the Zoom links so you can come to all four of those talks free for a month and enjoy. What's not to love it?
Sounds brilliant. And we've got some good stuff coming up.
Got, yeah, relentlessly good stuff all the time. Okay, take care then, Nathan.